Welcome to the AquariMax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 84, recorded October 17th, 2011.
Okay, third time's a charm.
Yeah, you guys didn't know, but it took me three times to get that right. My mouth didn't want to work.
That's okay.
Who do we have today?
We have a lot of different things from a lot of different contributors, so thank
Lovely.
You for different things from all our different contributors that responded this week. So let's start out with
Juliet in France, in Paris.
Yes. She said that she lost one of her new
female
shrimp.
We're still talking about her shrimp.
Yeah, her cherry shrimp. She said she's had more than 30 babies.
And wow.
She expects that because the females were probably imported, they were sort of doomed.
Under a fair amount of stress from traveling and whatnot.
Yeah, and her own male and babies are doing fine, and at least she hopes they are. And I have heard that adult cherry shrimp are less likely to acclimate successfully than juveniles, so that makes sense. And hopefully the rest of the babies will be fine. But she has noticed some hitchhikers in her aquarium. So,
are they carrying towels?
I hope they know where their towels are, but
they better be some real hoopy fruits.
Yes. Don't panic. It'll be okay. I think we know what's... Okay, sorry. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy again.
It's great. It's a great book.
It is.
Go read it if you haven't read it.
So she said she'd noticed a lot of minute white creatures crawling on the glass. They're so small that she can't even see them properly with a magnifying glass, but they seem to move like leeches, scrunching up and stretching out.
Mm.
Now, really, these could be various things, but in the email I sent Juliet, I was thinking that they might well be this type of minute flatworm that doesn't get any really bigger than minute. It stays that size. But they look sort of like planaria.
Just really, really tiny?
Just really, really, yes. Tiny and white. And it could be that that's what they are. Or it could be that they are something different, because the scrunching and stretching out makes me think more of like one of the aquatic true worms, not a flatworm, but a true worm that do a bit of that. The ones like that are related to darrow worms.
They're just smaller.
Or maybe even small darrow worms. I'm not sure.
So there's a couple different options here.
Yes, it could be.
Did she send us a picture?
She didn't. It's probably
Imagine
too hard
if
to take a picture of something
small,
that small
it's not gonna,
without specialized equipment. Right. But she was wondering if they were planaria or leeches. If they are leeches, they're going to be dangerous, or because these be causing the shrimp deaths. And very likely, we have good news here, because it's not likely that they're causing any problems with the shrimp. Because if they are those little flatworms, those are not particularly harmful, and neither are the darrow worms. So, we probably don't need to worry about that. But
that's good.
There are some issues we probably want to address that relate to that. However, now they may have come in with a recent shipment of shrimp. You know, it doesn't take many to start reproducing. Some of these creatures can reproduce asexually. And so you'd only need to get one to start something, and they reproduce rather quickly as well. And some of them, you know, they reproduce sexually, but it doesn't take very many to get them started, nor does it take very much time. But it could also be that they were just in the aquarium at a low population, and over time, especially if conditions change to be more to their liking, if they start proliferating like crazy, or they just started out at such a low population density that you didn't notice, and then they have increased.
Now, their presence known.
Right. But the good news is they're probably not harmful, because the little flatworms and the darrow worms are not harmful. Usually fish will help pick them off. Shrimp don't seem to be nearly as interested in eating them. But one issue is that often they begin to proliferate when there's extra food for them. It could be that because of the way shrimp eat, I mean, if you watch a cherry shrimp, for example, eat an algae pellet, they're ripping little bits off, but they're also leaving behind quite a bit of...
So they're kind of messy eaters and spilling crumbs all over the place.
With certain kinds of food. With algae, you know, it's a little different, but with things like algae chips, they're a little more messy, and if that is indeed the case, that they have been feasting upon such fare, it could be that there's enough residue. It wouldn't have to be much residue at all, so you could still be feeding pretty conservatively, and there could be some extra food left over that is giving them something to, you know, feast on and breed on. So, what I
so
might,
should she try to feed less, or just not worry about it because they're probably harmless?
Well, they are pretty harmless, but it may mean that there are too many nutrients in the system. It may not mean that, but just see how much food your shrimp are leaving and so on, and maybe think about that. If it turns out that you vacuum the area where your shrimp are eating on the gravel afterwards and a whole bunch of, you know, uneaten food comes out of the gravel because they've been pulverizing it as they're eating and dropping it down in the gravel, then you could put something like, you know, a terracotta pot, one of those flat trays made out of terracotta down on the gravel,
like just from
feed
the garden
them in there.
Store.
Right, and then vacuum right from there, and that might help, you know, minimize what ends up in the gravel where the little critters can eat it.
That's a good idea.
That could be one way to do it. But eliminating them is unlikely, at least while you have that particular population profile of just cherry shrimp in the tank, because anything that would eliminate them or keep down their numbers a lot, other than, you know, reducing the amount of nutrients going into the system, would probably be dangerous to the shrimp as well.
Right.
You know, you put a fish in there to eat them, some fish will eat them, but they'll also eat baby shrimp and, you know, terrorize the adult shrimp and so on. So, there we go. Now, I wish I could be more helpful, but I can't.
Well, at least, you know, if they're not harmful, then...
Yeah.
Now that she finally has her shrimp, you don't want something nasty in there with them.
Right. And without, you know, looking at the tank, and even if I could look at the tank, I couldn't give a 100% positive identification, but those are my most likely guesses, which is about as far as I can go, really, realistically. So, she has another question. I think this is a great one. From what diseases and parasites do shrimp suffer? The only thing ever mentioned is that the water quality must be very good, and that they are very sensitive to copper, ammonia, etc. And that's usually what you hear. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that. I think one of them is there's not that much information out there, and this is partly due to the fact that shrimp in the aquarium hobby have become popular fairly recently. You go back 10 years.
Recently what?
You go back 10 years, and there were a few shrimp in the hobby, but not nearly as many species as there are now.
Are you talking just freshwater or marine?
Probably
too?
Both, but I'm speaking specifically about freshwater. I mean, marine shrimp have been popular longer, but they're still increasing the number of species and so on in the saltwater hobby, but especially freshwater shrimp. There are a lot of them that have been discovered, at least by the hobby, and some of them have just been discovered in the past few years.
So they just haven't really had time to do a whole lot of research,
That's part of it. And I think also, you know, shrimp tend to be pretty hardy if they're kept in excellent conditions, which, you know, most shrimp hobbyists tend to try to keep their shrimp in excellent conditions because they stay alive more easily. They don't necessarily succumb to diseases. They succumb to an environmental condition a lot of the time. If they're going to die, it's because something is going wrong in their environment. But then it's probably also true that diseases are often follow suboptimal environmental conditions, you know, that they've, or stress that they've undergone for some reason. But I have been looking into that a bit lately, and I found a couple of things that I'll put on the resource page. There's an article that talks about some bacterial diseases and how to deal with those with shrimp, and some of the antibiotics that have been tried with shrimp and apparently have worked okay.
They have antibiotics for shrimp?
Well, antibiotics that have been used for aquarium fish historically and so have been tried with shrimp with some success.
Interesting.
Then there's a German website that apparently used to have a lot of good information on shrimp, but the website's been taken down, but they now have a Facebook page that has some things on it, so you can run it through
What's
Google Translate
Facebook?
And sort of sort through it, and I'll put that on the
resources
page, partly because I can't pronounce it, because it's in German. So that's on the resources page. You can check that out. She also had a question about shrimp diseases and parasites, and if there was any danger introducing snails and etc. that often harbor parasites. So, it is true that snails can harbor parasites. In fact, we may have mentioned this before on the show, but There are many parasites that have extremely complicated life cycles that involve all sorts of creatures, some of them terrestrial, some of them aquatic. And so the vectors are, that's the name they use for the species that the parasite moves from one species to another. Each of those species in the cycle is known as a vector, you know, that transmits parasites. Aquatic snails are not uncommon as a vector for parasites. They live in them. So, yes, snails can carry them. But the nice thing about
that... Will they go after the shrimp, though? Do we know?
Well, this is sort of... most of the vectors have to be very specific species in the life cycle that live in a specific place. So if you have a certain snail in that area where the snail is, there's a certain species that follows that in the cycle. And so if that other species is not present, you break the cycle of the parasite. So if you are taking snails from one part of the world and keeping them with shrimp from another part of the world, and in the wild they'd never encounter each other, it's fairly unlikely, and at least much less likely, that this parasite is going to be able to propagate through several generations, if there is one. So that's nice. And another thing that helps, too, is that captive-bred snails are less likely to carry parasites because of this life cycle.
Because they haven't been out in the wild to pick up parasites.
Right, and they're the other hosts. I should really say vector is something that carries a disease or a parasite, and a host is, when you're thinking about it, as the organism that allows the parasite to live in it, or not allows, but...
But if those snails bred in captivity haven't been around the other critters that carry it, the other vectors that carry it in other parts of its life cycle, they're not likely to pick it up and continue the parasite's life cycle because they're not around it.
Right, so if one of the hosts in the cycle isn't there to be a vector of the parasite, then it's not going to be able to continue, and the cycle is broken. So captive bred snails are much safer that way and tend not to do that so much. Of course, you can't always rule things out definitively that way because it's a generalization, and so generalizations are almost always wrong.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Or at least almost always have exceptions, I should say. But, yeah, probably not the thing you have to worry about too much.
And the snails themselves, they wouldn't bug the shrimp, would they? Are there snails that would bug shrimp and snails that wouldn't?
There has been some talk of assassin snails attacking shrimp. But I've kept them together without too many problems. I mean, right in this tank here, I've got them both, and they're both breeding.
And they have plenty of places to hide.
Upstairs I've got another tank with the same situation. So, yeah. I've heard some people say that the assassin snails can do something to the shrimp, like release some sort of toxin or something. But I'm not sure if it's true. I can neither confirm nor deny it. But most snails will leave shrimp alone just by virtue of the speediness of shrimp and the lack of speediness among snails.
I guess that's true.
But they'll certainly eat one that dies. But yeah, that's usually fine. Okay, so hopefully that helps. I wish I could be more specific, but I'm afraid that's about as far as I can go on that for now.
The body of knowledge is limited at this point in time.
Yeah, but check out the links on the resources page, and hopefully they'll be helpful as well.
Okay. Next, we have Brian in Idaho.
Yeah, he found the website for the Ceramic Live Rock. When we did the interview with him a few weeks ago, he mentioned that there's a couple of companies that produced artificial live rock, which is good because it's sustainable, more sustainable than live rock, real live rock from the ocean.
So they just, remind me, it's been a couple of weeks, do they just seed their rocks that they make?
They have a special process to make this rock that has a lot of the same characteristics as live rock. In terms of porosity and the ability to host beneficial bacteria, and then they seed it. Yes.
Do you get to pick what they seed it with?
When I say they seed it, I should say somebody seeds it along the line. I'm not sure if the Ceramico people seed it, but the aquarist would seed it by adding...
So when you buy it, it doesn't have anything on it.
That would be my... my guess. I just glanced at the website so far.
Because I thought they called it live rock because when you bought it, it was going to grow stuff on its own and you never know what you were going to get. And it was kind of a fun surprise grab bag.
Well, there are several reasons why they call it live rock. And it's true that the rock will often, you know, you put it in your tank and new little critters will show up, as we've had experience with doing. But really the reason why they call it live rock... Oh, let's have a break.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
It's basically, live rock is live in the sense that it carries all sorts of organisms, and you put them in the aquarium, they start to proliferate and become visible macro organisms, mm-hmm. like sponges and tunicates and crabs and whatnot that you find, macro algae, all that kind of stuff. But it also, inside it, it's basically coral skeleton, ancient, or, well, the age varies, but dead coral skeleton.
Okay.
And it's very porous, and the bacteria live both on the outside and the inside of it, various types that will take care of wastes, process wastes, just like in the gravel in a freshwater aquarium.
So it's surface area.
Yeah, exactly. It has a lot of surface area with varying degrees of oxygen available. And when the layers on the outside have more oxygen, layers on the inside less, so that they can handle different types of waste because there are different chemical processes going on. So
they
it's
call
live in that
the
sense.
Synthetic live rock because it can host bacteria because it's porous.
Basically, yeah. At least it's porous enough to be able to, and has a lot of surface area. So,
but when you buy it,
works.
You don't get critters with it.
I doubt it. I mean, they would be capable of seeding it, but I'm pretty sure that they don't. I would need to check out the website.
So it's basically you just use it as a base.
Right. I do know that some companies will actually take bits of concrete-like material, mm-hmm. put it out in the ocean. I believe the term is mariculture. Or cultured live rock, where you take something out in the ocean.
And
well, mariculture can refer to raising fish in the ocean, too. But, yeah, they'll take the rock out, let things grow on it, and then sell it. Because they never took it off of a reef, and so it's more sustainable.
That.
They're taking chunks of rock material and turning it into live rock that way. It's not quite the same, but it's, you know. So there are various ways to look at it. Base rock is when you take a rock that is, you know, it doesn't have anything living on it, you put it in your aquarium, and then by adding a little bit of live rock, you can seed it. But it's the same material that live rock is, but it's not live.
Okay.
And he says there's another one in France, too, and we'll put both of those on the resources page. And he says the one in France, though, unless, you know, Juliet might get some there, it might be economically feasible for her, but in U.S. it wouldn't be feasible.
No, we do have quite a few listeners in Europe now.
Yeah,
so.
We do, so that might be good for some of our European listeners. And it turns out this Ceramico company is just minutes away from where we live.
Really?
We could probably get there in 15 minutes.
They're in Salt Lake?
They are.
How funny is that?
So we could contact them. I think we will contact them and see if they'll let us do a tour or at least, I don't know, do an interview or something.
That would be neat.
That would be fun. And anyway, check out those links and we'll give that a try. Thanks, Brian.
Okay, now we're going to hear from Mick in Carnforth.
Yeah. He wants to give us his latest update with his shrimpy adventures. He's...
You know what? We should come up with, like, a theme song intro for the shrimp. We could do all the shrimp adventures, and we'd have, like, a section of the show that is... I don't know, shrimp adventures. What do you call it? Shrimp in space!
The Decapod Dynasty.
Ooh,
I don't know. We'll call it something.
There you go.
That'd be funny.
The young and the shrimpy.
Yeah, there you go. The yellow cherries that Mick has. What, you know, the...
Mm-hmm. Are these the stripy, bumblebee looking
no,
ones?
No, these are different. They
these
look
different.
Like red cherry shrimp, except they're yellow.
Okay.
He said, despite his most painstaking acclimation program, he lost all the yellows except for one.
Oh, sadness.
And half of the bee shrimp.
That is very sad indeed.
It is sad. And the ones that he managed to keep alive were poor quality. They looked kind of like dirty crystal reds.
Oh.
So he gave them to a friend with a planted tank who didn't really mind. You know,
just wanted something
just
to clean up the tank.
One little shrimp. And since he was disappointed, he's been looking for an alternate supplier because that one didn't do a whole lot for him. But he did get some... He got 9 cherry shrimp, but these are Sakura Red. cherry shrimp.
And what do those look like?
Said they have brilliant deep red coloration.
Mm.
Yeah. I think I've seen pictures of these, and sakura in Japanese means cherry blossom. So it kind of works.
There you go.
Because we've got cherry shrimp, and you get the really
red.
Brilliant red ones, and you call them cherry blossom. So that kind of works.
There you go.
Right? Yeah, I've even known a couple of Japanese people with that name.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's cool. And it's a testament to the awesomeness of fish clubs, isn't it? Because, I mean, when you want to get livestock, if you have a fish club to go to, think of all the benefits.
They don't have to travel as far.
Right. So there's not as much shipping stress. Granted, mm-hmm. there's some because they bag them and they bring them and you bring them home. But not as much.
You don't have to go through the post office.
Right. And it's not like 3 days in priority mail or anything.
Right.
And it's usually a really good price. And you don't have to pay the shipping costs, which is another benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stock that's raised locally, so it's usually easier to acclimate. It's just kind of a win-win thing.
That's a good thing.
So good on you for getting them there. That's a good way to do it. And he said he also got 5 Caridina species hummel.
Now, what are those?
They're shrimp as well, and they're very similar in appearance to bee shrimp, but they have reversed colored bands. So the head is blue or black, or bluish-blackish rather than white, like in the bee shrimp. Where you'd find the stripes, it's just the opposite pattern in a way. I'm wondering, now, can those hybridize with bee shrimp? Is it just a color variety?
I don't know. Maybe they would lose their stripes and just be all in color.
I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out how that works genetically. We could check the hybridization chart and see if they're on there.
Oh, yeah, our shrimp multiplication chart.
Well, it's not ours, but
What did we call it? Just shrimp multiplication chart.
No, I think you found something else.
Something slightly more pithy.
Yeah, it was good.
I don't remember what it was.
It was a witty thing you
came up
with.
It was a one-time thing.
That's okay. But it's a cool-looking shrimp. He sent a picture. I'll see if I can put a picture up on the resources page, too. I'm just curious about whether or not. And he said he's going to get some yellow cherries from the new source, the same place he got the hummels. And also some white pearl shrimp. Now,
those sound pretty.
White pearl shrimp, are those the same as snowball shrimp? I don't know. I'm asking.
I don't know either.
I'm asking. So maybe, Mick, you can tell us, because I've seen pictures of snowball shrimp, and they look cool. Their eggs look like snowballs.
Really?
Yeah.
Are they white? The shrimp are white?
I think the shrimp are white, and their eggs are white, and it's just kind of neat. But I don't know if this is the same as the white pearl shrimp or not, so it would be interesting to say. He says his rabbit snails came, the Sulawesi snails, they're quite small yet, and they need hard water and breed similar to the way assassins do, so when he gets some good pictures, he's going to send those.
Oh, very good.
So that would be nice to see. And he had an idea about, a comment about algae crews. He said his best algae cleaners that he's ever seen are horned nerite snails.
And we have olive nerites, right?
We have olive nerites, right. They are a bit different, yes. These horned nerites are spiky. They have spikes emanating from their shells.
Do spikes emanate, or do they just stick out?
I don't know.
Emanate kind of connotes like
energy,
an aura, or a vapor, or something.
Maybe it does.
That's okay.
But maybe you're
so
right.
Is it actually part of their shells, or is it flesh?
Yeah, I think I've seen snails that have those. They have spiky-looking processes that are just part of their mantle, but I believe the horned nerites have a shell that is spiky.
A shell that has pokey parts.
Yes. He said that he put a couple of those in a 20-gallon tank, and within 2 days, it was cleared of all algae that they could reach, and it kept it that way.
That's exciting.
So they sound pretty good. And he's thinking of putting some in his tank with his yellow Labidochromis. Those are mbunas, African rift lake cichlids. Pretty popular ones. They're those electric yellows, they're sometimes called, or yellow labs.
Yellow labs?
Yeah.
Do they fetch?
Probably. If you get the fish school kit, they'd probably do that for you. And it has the tufa stone in there, and it gets really algified. And so he figures they're tough. They can handle a large range of water parameters, so he's going to try some in there.
My question is, since these snails have spiky shells, is it easier to keep them with fish that would normally eat a snail?
That's a good question.
They'd kind of stick in their throat.
I would tend to intuitively say that there were probably some fish that would be deterred by the spikes, and some fish that wouldn't give a rip. Yes, like pufferfish would probably just come up and bite everything off.
Yeah,
the big pufferfish. But some other fish that will swallow other snails would probably have a hard time with a horned snail, right? You know, like a goldfish will come and suck a snail shell right off the glass and chew it around and spit out the shell again after it's eaten the inside.
But they can really do that.
But they do that with the fairly thin-shelled snails.
Right.
I doubt they could do that with a horned snail, right? So, yeah, we'll have to see sometime. Maybe we can get our LFS to get some horned snails and we can try those out.
That would be neat.
Yeah. So thanks, Mick.
Okay, we're going to go to Stuart now.
Yeah, Stuart in the UK also.
Although this time, he's in Las Vegas.
Well, yeah, he spent some time in Las Vegas recently, and he said he stayed in the Mandalay Bay Hotel, which has its own aquarium called the Shark Reef. I remember driving past that place and thinking, whoa, I'm
thinking,
I want to go
see that
aquarium.
One of the few reasons to ever go to Las Vegas.
Yeah, you can tell Kelly doesn't like Las Vegas.
Oh, I don't
very
like
much.
Las Vegas.
But
it's
I would
a silly
love to
place.
Visit this this particular hotel. It's probably the only reason I'd really want to go to Las Vegas personally either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, there's lots of fun things there, but whatever.
Only if you gamble and drink, and which we do neither, so there's really nothing to go to Vegas for. Except the Shark Tank. That would be cool.
I would love to see the Shark Tank. So, he said it was absolutely incredible, and it's advertised as the largest predator-based aquarium in North America.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. How big is it?
It's so big. I don't know how big
when
it is.
When they say they swim around the house, they really swim around the house. Sorry, guys.
And I thought this was kind of a nice thing. He said that he has 5 episodes to catch up on now, so it's going to make his work at the office a bit more bearable.
Oh, good. It's nice to know we make your day better.
Yeah. And he's getting back to us on our question. We said to him a couple of episodes ago, we asked him about his fertilizer, the John Innes fertilizer number 2.
Oh, if it was really fertilizer or if it was compost.
Yeah, and Mick was saying it's probably the compost.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what he said. And Stuart said, yes, it is. It is the compost.
It is the compost.
He said, sorry that I said fertilizer. I just didn't have enough sleep.
That's okay.
But it is a compost.
I do that all the time.
And then he puts the sandbox sand. He uses that too, because it's been fully cleaned to be safe for children. So if you rinse off the excess dust, it works fine in an aquarium.
That's nice.
Okay. So,
did he send us any pictures of the Mandalay Bay?
No, not yet. Maybe we can get him to do that.
Yeah, if you've got some, send them.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That'd be neat.
We'd like that. I'd like to see how maybe he sets up the compost and the thing. It sounds like very much like a Wallstad tank, Diane Wallstad tank, where they put the compost on the bottom and then a layer of sand over that, and you plant the plants in there. So, yeah, maybe we can get hold of that some. I haven't seen any in stores around here, but who knows? Maybe
I bet we could pick it up online and find out if they sell it in the U.S.
Stuart put a link in.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
There we go.
We'll put a link there, but it's a European store. It's home base, but it's got the price in pounds. So,
it's home base?
Or something. I think it was.
Isn't there one here? Oh, no, that's Home Depot.
Home Depot here.
They're all kind of that sort of name.
Yeah.
Didn't there used to be home base stores in the U.S., though?
I don't know.
I don't remember that. Maybe that's just in California. I'm a California girl.
We'll look and see if we can find somewhere. That would be cool. And I know that it's Miracle-Gro Organic Choice that Diane Wallstad uses here. It's another possibility. That's what she mentioned in her article in Aquarium Fish International recently. She did. So, probably sort of a similar thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last thing, parting shot here, comes from us. Thanks again, Stuart, and thanks to all of our contributors today. But
we'd love to hear from you all.
We do, and we encourage you all. And if you want to leave a message for us, an audio message, that'd be great, because I'm a little worried that it's not working because we haven't heard anybody on it for a while, and there have been some changes on our computer. So if you just want to test it out and just call and say, hey, it works, that would be cool. Even that, I would be grateful for that.
Or if you have tried it and it hasn't worked, Facebook us or something and tell us so we can try to fix it.
We want to make sure that's working. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, I think we have reached the end of our rope, so to speak. We're running out of time. So, we would like to say to you,
May the fish be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.